This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, the search for the next Prime Minister continues, so we're going to talk about who's in the running and the collaboration that will need to take place after a PM is chosen.
So first, we look at possible ways PM9 can reach across the political aisle. And then we dive into the latest news that UMNO is putting forth Dato Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob as their candidate and what that might mean. Finally, we revisit an interview about who else is in the running.
So, what we want to know today is, do you think our politicians can actually put aside their differences and work together? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is coming along to 6:08, and as promised, our focus today is really going to be on the hunt for PM9. But more specifically, we wanted to start with what is likely to need to happen immediately once someone is chosen, which is to say that there is going to be a need for the Prime Minister to reach across the political aisle in some form or another, because the Agong has already said that he is expecting that the Prime Minister will need to test that majority in Parliament.
So just to get you up to speed, today's developments, as it stands for now, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob is reportedly in the lead to take over that Prime Minister post. This is coming, of course, because thus far we know that he has support from UMNO, PAS, as well as Bersatu. However, Malaysia Kini has reported also that the opposition is presenting a united front. 105 MPs are backing Tan Sri Anwar Ibrahim. Really, a lot now hinges on that meeting that's going to happen between the Agong and the other sultans and other heads of state, really, at on Friday. And during the Agong's meeting with the heads of political parties yesterday, he did point out that he expects MPs to work together to focus on COVID-19 response as well as economic recovery, which of course comes back to the thing that you just started with, Lynn, this idea of cooperation across party lines.
I believe it was the opposition leader, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, who said something about how the Agong is asking for new politics, which is a phrase that we've heard used before, right? In fact, we've heard used many times over this idea that there is something wrong with the way that our politics and the system currently runs, and we need to address that. Of course, the last time it was said, I don't think it was necessarily in a crisis of this magnitude. So perhaps now it'll be taken more seriously. Anyway, if we look at how some of this cooperation might take place, I think you may have heard this phrase thrown around a lot, CSA, or Confidence and Supply Agreement, which from what I understand, we are going to get our guests to explain it in a bit more detail later, but from what I understand, is a political agreement where an opposition party or MPs agree not to vote against a ruling government in budgetary matters or through a motion of or for a motion of no confidence. And this is usually employed in a situation where there is a minority government, but it does not involve the forming of any sort of coalition, and therefore doesn't come with the sorts of binds and agreements that coalitions would come with. So it is limited in terms of what they will vote together on. So that's one way in which we could see it proceed. The other term that we've been hearing a lot is unity government.
Yes, so a unity government is essentially a government that contains most or all of the major political parties in parliament. It's also known as a grand coalition government. And this is an option that's been put forth by a number of political commentators, including Lim Teck Gee, as well as Mohammad Tajuddin Rasti, UMNO Youth. And that would essentially involve a sort of giving a voice for every party, right? Providing a platform, or rather, putting the idea of governance in the multiplicity of voices that already exist in Parliament. However, that also is not without its criticism or its detractors. For instance, Wong Chin Huat, who we will be speaking to shortly, has said that a confidence and supply agreement might actually be more effective than a unity government because it can get quite difficult to contend with the sheer number of political parties as well as their internal rivalries.
That and checks and balances, right? Mm. Because if the opposition is now also part of a government, I don't know. You know, these are the kinds of questions that have shown up. So we are going to start off our show not by looking at necessarily the race, because because there's so much left to be said, and also because the meeting between the rulers is really only going to happen on Friday. But we wanted to look at what's going to happen, what the Prime Minister, whoever it may be, will need to do, which is to work with other people. And we want to know, do you think that our politicians can actually put aside their differences and do that, work together? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be joined by political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the race, really, that's ongoing to see who's going to be the next Prime Minister. But we wanted to focus on what will need to happen, essentially, that the Prime Minister will need to reach across the aisle and work with MPs of all stripes and parties. So we would like to know, from your perspective, do you think our politicians can actually put aside their differences and work together? Keep those thoughts coming. In the meantime, we are crossing over to political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat. Chin Huat, always good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So to start us off, I thought we could get your take, because we haven't actually spoken to you since it happened, on the ongoing process of how our next PM is being decided with the SDs and so on.
As we can see, the situations get more interesting, because just now, GPS, with 18 seats, declare itself to abstain and leave the decision to the king. And we have a very interesting way that MPs are asked to send in through email or even WhatsApps a letter to indicate their position. And I understand that tomorrow, the MPs will be called one by one on Zoom to double confirm their intentions. Now, all these things is rather unusual, because our system lacks something commonly found in established democracy in the Commonwealth world called cabinet manual. It's just like when you buy a new machine, you get a manual because it's complicated for you to operate it. The country is a big machine. You need a manual, and that supplements the constitution to tell you the details. For example, if there is a midterm change of government, what's the process, who to actually reach out to. Now, I hope that after this crisis, we would have something, we would have the situation will force our politicians and government to sit down and formulate a cabinet manual. We should not let these things go on and on.
It is becoming very clear, though, that whoever the next PM is going to be, it's not going to be someone with a commanding majority. How will this impact the way the next government functions?
If the government were to act as if it is, meaning that you act like a minority government when you are one, it would actually be better, because the governance of the country would become much more consensus-based, and people would have to be more humble. You will see less of toxic politicking around. However, if the next government going to act like a strong majority government, when its majority is very mild, and you probably going to see what we have seen in the past 17 months to be repeated again, unfortunately.
And as we've been saying, there's a lot of discussion around the idea that there needs to be more consensus, more cooperation across the aisle. How do you see that taking place?
This can happen either by getting the opposition to form a government with more parties, that what you discussed just now as unity government. And the other option is just that whether the government is majority or a minority government, you reach out to make deals with the opposition. So everyone has a gentleman or lady to be gender neutral, lady agreement, so that you decide what to do and what not to do, and the government can survive, opposition get the room to put in their input in policymaking and so on. So it's certainly possible. And we have successful examples. Countries like New Zealand, Denmark and Canada, they have had minority governments. You do not see political crisis very often.
We have spoken to you previously about this confidence and supply agreement, right? Could you give us a brief explainer on how exactly that would work? What would it entail?
Okay. If you have a party who is willing to join the government, then you have a coalition. What if a party just is friendly enough to keep you in power but doesn't want to join? Or you have problem getting them joining, but you need their support. So then the midway house is to have a confidence and supply agreement. Supply refers to supply bill, or the technical term for budget. So what they mean is that the idea of parliamentary democracy is based on one election for two institutions, the legislature and the executive. And executive is actually, if you think of the cabinet, is a committee appointed by the whole house. So the whole house can always dismiss the committee. That's what is happening with confidence and non-confidence vote. If you have a budget get rejected, you have the royal speech get rejected, all these things would bring down the government. A confidence and supply agreement means that the opposition promise that if you have such a bill, either I vote for you or I restrain from voting against you, allow you to survive. So it's about providing some form of flexibility that when you are not friendly enough to stay together, but a promise that we are not going to be enemies. And in return, what do you give me?
And how might we see a confidence and supply agreement play out in the next administration? What kind of framework would it involve?
It depends on how big the government is. If the government is a minority government, then definitely it would reach out to. If it's a majority government, there is a temptation to say, let's go back to business as usual. And I would hope that the government, whoever it is, even if it's a majority one, knowing that their majority is so slim, they should have CSA, if necessary, multiple differentiated CSA with different party to ensure the government survive. Now, why this is important? Because then you would have political stability. You don't have to worry about the government get topper every now and then. And the government has a free hand to discipline underperforming or misbehaving ministers and MPs. One problem with the last government is because it's so weak that you have incompetent ministers, law-breaking deputy ministers staying on because the government dare not to do anything. And instead, they get threatened. So these are ways that we can go through. And it all depends on how far it would go.
So the worry with CSAs and this idea of collaboration between opposition and government is the loss of checks and balances and the potential for corruption, right? How can we mitigate that?
It actually would not be. The main reason being that the reason why an opposition party choose to sign a CSA and not going into government is because they have a political distance. So they do not want to get too close for fear of getting hurt. And sometimes it could be really because the government is so lousy. I do not want to join in and take political responsibility for any of its failure. But it's not in my interest to have an election immediately. So it would not actually hurt it. It's actually more problematic when we have the idea of unity government, it turning into indefinitely. Meaning that you have a unity government that go on and on. That was the idea with the formations of Barisan Nasional in 1974 after the alliance government reaching out to the opposition to form a separate coalition government at federal and state and local level.
Now, for the time being, we are seeing an openness from MPs to work together. At least that's what they're saying publicly. This is coming, of course, directly after an admonition of sorts from the Agong, public outcry. Will this actually equate to true political will to collaborate once the dust settles?
It comes back to one thing. Do people prepare now to accept the reality that we will have to live with division among political parties? If anyone still thinks that this is a chance for us to win and we will continue to win, then it will not happen. It's simply a difference between the mentality of an insurance buyer and a gambler. If you are a gambler, you believe that your luck is going to be good. If you lose, it's only temporary setback. I will win next again. And therefore, you would not want to change the game. You prepare to take a risk because you believe that, well, risk is nothing, I'm going to win. But if you are a sensible person, like most people who buy insurance, you realize that you're not going to win all the time. So when the time is good, you prepare to forego a little bit of your extra benefit in terms of premium in return for the coverage when time is bad. So it's a whole question about whether we can bring our politics to a more sensible and rational level. And that has to come down to one thing. We need to stop looking politics at a very moralist way. Not everything is about bad guy and good guy. We have to accept and say, sometimes people on the other side from us, it's simply because they just happen to be there sharing the same ones like us. But that doesn't make them the bad guy. What we need, I would say, is to turn politics into something like sports. Athletes do not see each other as enemy. They compete, but they don't kick each other. They kick the football.
Said though, we are seeing a lot of differences in opinion within the parties about who to work with, who they don't want to work with. What is the impact of this?
It's probably going to go one round. And I think, as I say, procedurally, we need a cabinet manual. But looking at what we have, the confidence vote that has to happen will provide the incentive for whoever formed the majority to be very careful, because from now until the confidence vote, there is chance that MPs change their mind and you cannot accuse them of playing with the king and so on. Politics changed by every day. Even after that confidence vote, you have a royal speech. A royal speech is another chance for you to bring down the government. After that, you have the budget, another chance to bring down the government. Even if you have the speaker to do gatekeeping, blocking every motions of no confidence. And I think the good things about all these episodes, after losing two prime ministers before the terms end, we are getting used to it. It's okay to change prime minister. The world does not collapse. And this is a fantastic achievement for Malaysians. No one is talking out Maggie Mee. Now, that's not a little thing. You think back, if it's 20 years ago, you say the prime minister is going to resign, I think people would rush and all the Maggie Mee would be sold out.
So, as you just pointed out, Chin-Huat, the formation of this new government will happen without the usual mechanism of a vote, which is the second time in as many years that this is happening. How do you see this impacting public support and opinion, and how might this translate to the ballot box in the next GE?
What's going to happen in the ballot box depends on the government performance as well as the opposition performance. But what's going to happen now about the legitimacy of the government would come back on what kind of deal you have. For example, you're going to have the same government with a new prime minister, nothing changed, like the Perak model. Even though the new prime minister is free from any court cases, it's not going to inspire any confidence. So the market probably going to respond very ruthlessly. And that's bad for the government. So the government would have to do things differently. And I think it's so important now, especially for people who do not get a chance to be appointed as prime minister, to focus on what the government should do rather than just who should become the prime minister. We should talk about agenda. And one of the things that I want to push beyond as an alternative to unity government and beyond just having a CSA is to have a federal state council on health and economy. What I mean is that we should have a council where you have three parties, the federal government, the opposition in the parliament, and all the state's governments together, because they need to make some decision and not just letting the cabinet make decision. This special structure was the function was played by the National Security Council during the emergency, but it's very narrow. So what we need is to change this, to widen it up. And now, in this rivalry to get this, I hope the state government, especially, for example, Sarawak, who now holds the king-making 18 votes, to push for this. They should demand to have a share rule on the important issues of health and economy so that we can make better position, better policy. We should not go for anything like unelected technocrats council, because that's dangerous. You do not have the political legitimacy. Eventually, you have to depend on the military and the police.
Chin Huat, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks so much.
That was political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat weighing in on how it is that the next prime minister will have to collaborate with others, whether it is his own party or opposition. Let us know, do you think our politicians can actually put aside their differences and work together? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. We'll be back for more after the 6:30 news. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're focused today, of course, on the ongoing race to see who is going to be the next Prime Minister of Malaysia. And we spoke earlier about whether or not MPs can collaborate, essentially, or whether or not because basically the PM, no matter who it is going to have to reach across the aisle. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. Do you think that our politicians can overcome their differences and work together? You can keep those thoughts coming. So far, broadly speaking, no. I think just to sum up, not a lot of optimism among the messages, but we'll get to that in a bit. We did, however, want to focus on one of the names that's really emerged from the beginning and is continuing to be a front runner in terms of who everyone thinks it might be, and that is Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, because UMNO has unanimously said that they've decided to nominate Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri as their sole candidate for Prime Minister.
Yes, and this is coming after some amount of perhaps internal push and pull, right? Because for a while, Tengku Razali Hamzah was one of the names that were also being brought up. But now it has become official, and he also commands currently the support of Bersatu as well as PAS. So that does put him in that front-runner position.
Yes, so that's what we wanted to talk about, because like we said, it's not, even though his name emerged early on, and I don't think it's necessarily a surprise, there has, however, been a lot of back and forth surrounding that. And there have been existing schisms within UMNO previously as well, which is what we wanted to address. So we're now crossing over to Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharuddin, Director at the Institute of Ethnic Studies. Prof, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So, talk to us about what's led up to Ismail Sabri being a front-runner for this role of Prime Minister.
Well, I must say, this is not UMNO's choice. This is originally Mahyudin's choice. And Mahyudin picked among the top four leaders, Zahid, Muhammad Hassan, Khalid Nordin, Mahathir Khalid, and Ismail Sabri. Out of these five, he chose Ismail Sabri as senior minister. And then, after 1 year, he was chosen as Deputy Prime Minister with Hishamuddin, who is also a senior UMNO member, used to be Vice President. So I think, I'm sorry to say from my personal opinion, this is accidental choice from my point of view.
Could you help give us an overview of Ismail Sabri's background and where he stands when it comes to his position within UMNO?
Well, he's for a long time, he's just an ordinary UMNO member and an ordinary MP. But slowly, during Mahathir's time and then Najib's time, especially, he prospered. Yeah. So he's from Pahang, Berah is his constituency. And he has won the constituency, I think, about 5 times. So he has been good grassroots politician. That's how I say. And he also has, he didn't cross anybody's line and become he's the weak one among all the strong characters. Khalid Nordin, a very strong character, former minister of higher education. Khalid Nordin, Muhammad Hadi Khalid is the same, Minister of Education. Muhammad Tok Hassan is only Tok Mat, is only Menteri Besar Negeri Sembilan. Zahid, of course, Deputy Prime Minister. Who is he? So I think that's why Mahyudin chose him. So, but then again, I think that's the reason why he was chosen as a senior minister among the UMNO leaders, not one of the names that I mentioned. So it's from there, following from there, and I must say, you know, Syamuddin was Mr. MH370, okay? And Ismail is Mr. COVID-19. So to the public, these two figures appears every day. So people start looking at what he's dressing, you know, his batik shirt. So comments not about COVID anymore. It's how fashion, what he wears. I mean, this is what I see on the social media. It's quite interesting. I like Malaysians for that reason. They forgot about COVID, but they remember him in what he wears. So, but definitely, nobody feel threatened by him. I don't see anyone coming, attacking him like the way they attack Mahyudin. So, in some ways, when it comes to the situation today, it's not surprising everyone is supporting him for being such a nice man, a nice politician, good politician, and he has changed his glasses 5 times. This is what I got from social media. So, it's very important to have someone who feels that everybody else and the other MPs feel that they can reach to him. I think that is very critical.
So we have spoken previously about the schisms that exist within UMNO. Now, where does this leave the members of the party who had previously closed the door on Perikatan Nasional?
Well, I cannot give you 3 answers. Is it because the whole exercise is anti-Mahyudin personally, yeah, and then anti-PN and anti people who are backbenchers, you know. So it's quite interesting for me to see. At the end, it was anti-Mahyudin. It's all out as if within the top UMNO leaders, you must remember, they're all in the same pool, they're all in the same room, UMNO leader, Deputy Prime Minister, Najib, Mahathir, and all this stuff. So, once Mahyudin broke rank in July 2018, that's it. And then BN lost and Mahyudin went on the other side. So the anger towards Mahyudin is getting bigger and bigger, and comes Sheraton move. He is already not acceptable to PH and not acceptable to top UMNO leadership. And there was accusation that he was asked to be, you know, to help the kleptocrat. So as he said in his speeches twice. So for me, the dendam, the revenge, deep revenge feeling is there. And because they are powerful politicians, they can reshape this dendam in various ways. And I can see how the so-called UMNO quarrel is not really UMNO quarrel between 4 or 5 personalities who are not very happy. So, but generally, he'll be okay. The rest of UMNO, BN, people think it's no harm to BN. He doesn't call MCA a useless party or MIC helpless. No, he never did. We always respect them. I think this very basic kampung values, I think, which will step good for him. No?
Let's talk about what he would be able to bring to pandemic management, right? Based on what we've seen so far, yeah. What can we expect from him?
Okay. This pandemic and management, there is a control structural situation that you have to understand. Okay. There is a the Security Council. There is a cabinet, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Science and Technology. These are all very closely related that create that iron cage of pandemic structural solution. So he will walk in. He will walk in to a plan that is already made. Not that I don't think he can think, but he can. But the question is, after more than nearly 17 months every day on TV and on radio and on everything else, I think he knows that what he has to do next is just to walk in and pick up where Mahyudin left, and we continue with his plan. And if he has a cabinet, he can now give more money, because, you know, interim prime minister can't do anything. So I think that's what he's going to do. Nothing new, but I think he'll push more. And what more now, he can write on the fact that this herd community is coming through vaccination. So he will write and coming in and say, look, I come in, everything become good. Huh? I'm sorry, I have to say this, but I think that is the situation he's facing. And I good on him. For me, it's good on him. Because people will see him as a good replacer or a replacement for Mahyudin. Because his mannerism, you can't see antagonism in the way he approaches subject matter. I don't see him shouting, raise his voice, you know, no, not smile. So in that sense, people like him outwardly, but people will see he is going to contribute as good as Mahyudin have been. Yeah, but he doesn't have that enemies that Mahyudin has.
And if we look at the politics of it all, we spoke earlier about the next PM having to move quickly to consolidate support with, you know, things like the budget, with the Agong speech in Parliament and so on. What do you think politically Ismail Sabri will be prioritising?
Again, I'm sorry to say that he has to work within a structure, in a line, and has to go step by step. This step by step is ready. It's just that Mahyudin walk out, so we got frozen, you know. For me, it got frozen. All this step-by-step movement is frozen. So when he comes in, so it's a bit like a movie. You stop, you shoot, and then you stop. And then you replay. And now a new prime minister, a new actor comes in to replace the Dark Knight, you know, man, you know, the actor. So the Australian guy. So someone will walk in and take over from him. No, replay. So it's the same. And I sound very cynical, don't I? But that's how I see it, like a movie. So they are going to move in with the same script, the same director, and I think perhaps not the same excitement. But because you don't need to be over-excited now, you need to solve. So we don't want him to do some, like, you know, bungee jumping, all this stuff to show how hero he is, you know. He just have to get his work done. I think that, and it will go. The step that you mentioned about the Dewan Rakyat meeting, Agong speech, will go on. They are ready. Even the draft of the Agong speech, draft of the Prime Minister's speech, actually, they are all ready, as far as I know. So the question now, Ismail has to read the Prime Minister's speech.
How would you compare him to the other front runner, current opposition leader, Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim?
Well, Ismail hasn't got that baggage that everybody else has. Okay, that is quite clear. Anwar Ibrahim, I learned that more and more people in PKR and PN, PH is getting upset because he's not doing anything. He's totally rejecting, because once he see that vacancy as PM, he just moved towards that rather than trying to find a middle way, you know, in between or accept the suggestion by Mahyudin. So a lot of, at least two DAP members are not very happy with the way PH reacted to the offer by Mahyudin. But that's on now. It's no more on now. So I think he will be able to get the support. I think the first move he will make is to see the opposition. That I know. He's already talking to the DAP and all these people, because we don't know here. They don't tell us. But from my forensic study of these people's movement, I would know they are already. And they are friends, you know. I've seen them in Parliament eating together, laughing, making jokes about everybody else. But when it comes to Parliament, they look very different, very again, sort of, you know. So that the people, voters like me and you, will say, oh, truly, man, they are good people representing us. But actually, they are very good friends. So I think he is beginning to... Because you must know that the opposition also will begin to contact him. Ismail, if you got him, I support you. What are you going to give me? It's a very simple and straightforward exercise in politics. It's not that complicated that we make in the newspaper. So they are talking to each other. And in fact, I believe Mahyudin talked to all the DAP members at the behest of Lim Guan Eng. They talked to Mahyudin, and the seven offers that Mahyudin gave were actually a prune down of DAP's offer. So sometimes we play this animosity game, which I think is good for the press and social media and all of us at home get excited. But actually, I think good things in Malaysia doesn't excite people. In some ways, now we get very excited, you know, if there is a punch up or something, you know. But overall, Malaysians like you and I will find this. We still eat our thosai in the morning and roti canai, so nothing changed in this country. And the public servant is running as if they are running all the ministries, because the ministers are gone, but the ministries are not gone. So that you have to also realize.
Prof, in closing, is there a message you'd like to leave us with?
Let's just say again.
Is there a message that you'd like to leave us with?
Ah, well, I think all of us, I think the Malaysians are fine. Ordinary Malaysians are fine. As I said, they are still enjoying their thosai in the morning or roti canai or nasi lemak. They will see. They are actually like observers, you know. So I think we just observe. And we can continue to say what we dislike, because now all the leaders have a component information resource from the social media. So, you know, we still can reach them. So I have no fear at all that they have to read the social media and react to that. So please keep on sending your messages, even how unhappy you are, how happy you are. You must express both ways. Thank you.
Prof, thank you so much for your time. That was Datuk Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharudin, Director at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, talking to us about Ismail Sabri emerging as the front runner, or as UMNO's candidate for Prime Minister, as supported by other component parties, you know, that were part of the PN coalition as well. Now, we know that whoever it is who becomes the next Prime Minister is going to have to work with the opposition. Let us know, do you think our politicians can actually put aside their differences and work together? We are going to be looking at your messages and calls after this, so keep them coming. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:55. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Our focus today has been on politics, but more specifically, we're looking at the race to be the next Prime Minister of Malaysia, and also focusing on what it is that that Prime Minister would have to do, because whoever it's going to be does not have a commanding majority. That just is the fact of the matter. And they would therefore have to work with the opposition pretty speedily. And we've been asking you, therefore, do you think that that is possible? Can our politicians put aside their differences and work together? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. We have so many messages that have come in.
So starting off with this one from Sunetra, who just says, no, they are a selfish lot.
Yeah, there is that.
Which I think is quite the tone of many of the messages that we've gotten.
Yes, that's true. So Daniel, for example, says MPs can work together, but parties can't. They have different ideologies. So should this happen, we wouldn't need to have so many parties. Also, Tun proposed a unity government before, but it wasn't acceptable. And I think, Daniel, you're right, you know, to a great degree when it comes to parties kind of wielding a lot of influence in this area. But I think also the proposal of the unity government, it does matter who it comes from. Because if we say MPs can work together, I don't think all of them can. And that's something that we heard earlier in our interview with Prof as well, in terms of dendam, right? And these old grudges, and the fact that a lot of these politicians come with a fair amount of baggage.
Yes, so for instance, Koo points out, for the older UMNO politicians, it's difficult for them to change the style that they used to work with the other side of the political divide. They're too arrogant and believe that they are the orang kayangan. And there is some of that, right? This idea of the old guard, and not just across the aisle, but even within the party, the idea that you've paid your dues, you've been around, and therefore you get to call the shots. And yeah, I can see why so many people think that it's going to take a lot to overcome that.
Ro says, this is much ado about nothing. PM resigns, DPM takes over, same party, same policies, lockdowns, rising cases, collapsing economy, and the old boys club goes on, the end. So, Ro, that is bleak. But also, I think the end At least for now, I don't think it's the end, in the sense that if we look at what was proposed, the olive branch that was put forth by Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, right, about the election happening latest by July 2022, anyway, we are going to see that election happen. So, yes, the Old Boys Club potentially going on, but also potentially not for that long.
We did have a call earlier from Sadiq, who said this new prime minister should be cooperative with all MPs, no matter who the king chooses. More cooperation with the opposition party. We don't know when COVID will end. So if they're still arguing among themselves, our economy will go down and Malaysians will be even more frustrated. And on that note, we have John as well, who said democracy can be a bit messy. But one thing that's positive from this is that there was accountability. If the prime minister and his cabinet don't perform, out you go. We may see some members of cabinet that perform that might join with the new prime minister. And I think both those messages do speak a lot to this idea that this current government will not be elected in, but we will have a general election soon. And that question of performance and accountability is important.
Yes, and it also speaks to some of the frustrations people had with this cabinet, right? Not just in terms of size, but in terms of transparency and performance and whether or not there was enough conversation around that. And I think stemming from those conversations, therefore, is a desire to see the next cabinet, whoever it may be, perform. So keep those thoughts coming. We've been talking about who may potentially be the next Prime Minister of Malaysia, but more crucially, the kinds of cooperation that will need to happen in order for there to be political stability. So we want to know what you think. Do you think politicians can work together despite their differences? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.